The Tom Woods Show, episode 2010.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. I am joined today by the great Ken McCarthy, who is considered to be one of the founding fathers, maybe the godfather of internet marketing. He recognized the commercial potential of the internet long before most people did. And he has been wildly successful as an entrepreneur online. He's also an expert copywriter, really one of the best. This is a guy who could sell you sand in the desert. He's an expert at it, but he's also just a very, very interesting guy with tremendous insights. And as with really intelligent people with tremendous insights, he's also sound on the whole COVID thing. And that just confirmed for me, I got to talk to this guy. And I have been an admirer of his for a while. And then I discovered through our mutual friend, Ben Settle, that he knew who I was. He was sending something to Ben to send to me. And I thought, wait a minute, Ken McCarthy knows who I am? That's pretty good. I'm getting him on the Tom Woods Show. So what's the podcast for, if not to bring about meetings of the minds like this one? So Ken, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom, thanks for having me.
All right, look, I have followed you and heard about you for a long time because the guy who basically taught me email marketing and who has made my, it's a good thing I owe him for the newsletter that I buy every month. And it's a good thing he doesn't have any share in what I have earned because of his teaching, because I don't want to give it up because it's been a lot. I hold that guy in such high regard, and he holds you in such high regard. I mean, you're the godfather of internet marketing and great, pioneer and all this. And so then when I found out that you actually knew who I was, I thought that is just too insane. So that's when I wrote and said, hey, let's have a conversation. And the thing is, a conversation with you can span, just as with Ben, quite a variety of topics. So we'll start with your, let's say, pioneering work and insights from the 1990s, but then we're just going to see where we go with it. If I go to your Wikipedia page, and I don't necessarily recommend that that's how you find out about somebody, go to their website and their bio, which is what it's way better than my Wikipedia entry, which people have been fighting over for years and years. The edit part, if you look at the collection of edits of my Wikipedia, it's like it would take up half the memory of some computer from the 1980s or something. But it does say on yours, it says that it acknowledges that people more or less recognize you for this and your, first of all, your appreciation early on of the commercial potential of the internet. And this is at a time, remember, this is even later. In fact, it was years later that Paul Krugman made his boneheaded remark about we're going to find that the internet had no bigger effect on the economy than the fax machine. What were you seeing that Nobel Prize winner Paul Krugman was not seeing?
Okay, well, I happened to be living in San Francisco at the time, which was a really good place to be living for this particular purpose. And I had been doing a lot of direct mail, which meant I had to write big checks to printers and big checks to the post office and big checks to mail houses. And I discovered there was a thing called email. Because I'm not a super tech guy, not at all. In fact, I think that's the secret of my success. But I could figure email out, and I said, wow, if just 10% of my customers will get on email, I could send them messages for free. And that was all it took for me. I didn't need a memo. I didn't need a book. I was on board. And I was in San Francisco, as I mentioned, and that was, at the time, the center of all things digital. The phrase digirati was invented. And for those folks. And at the time, the big theme of the entire San Francisco and Silicon Valley community was multimedia. And this was just before the CD-ROM became available. And your friend and mine, Bill Gates, was pushing the CD-ROM maniacally that this was going to change the world. And so everybody in San Francisco was geared up to make CD-ROMs. And I looked at that and I said, let me see, we can distribute stuff for free digitally all over the world, or we can press CD-ROMs, put them in boxes and ship them, and all the complexities involved in that. So I put a flag in the sand and I went to my multimedia friends in that industry and I said, guys, it's going to be the web. Half of the community said I was an idiot and they were very upfront about telling me so. The other half said, this is intriguing, Ken. So on, looking at the date, November 5th, 1994, I invited then 23-year-old Mark Andreessen to come to San Francisco. He's the founder of Netscape. He's the creator of the web browser. And by goodness, he said yes. The week before, he had blown off that big Las Vegas computer industry event because he was too busy. But he came to ours and he gave his pitch for the web. So that was one of the things I did. I also wrote the very first article ever published in a legitimate print magazine on why we should use email for marketing. Time magazine slipped up and actually gave me credit for something. They credit me with being the person who recognized the power of the click-through rate.
Yes, I saw that.
And, yeah, and there's a lot of things like that. And I feel a little bit like Columbus. I mean, the America was already here, you know, but he happened to get there first. And I feel that same thing about the internet. Obviously, the internet was already there. Some people were already doing some commercial experiments on it. But I was the first person to really articulate all the things that could be done. So that's me.
Now, since then, you've done an awful lot of things. I've been reading about your background. One thing I like about you is even though you have a, if not a soft-spoken manner, then, you're not bombastic or anything. But at the same time, Ken McCarthy has a level of badassery that I can only aspire to because I noticed that you sell a copywriting course. Now, I want to clarify for my audience that's obsessed with IP. We're not talking about copyright, C-O-P-Y-R-I-G-H-T. Of course, you don't need a course on that. But writing copy, writing advertising copy or writing marketing copy, and you sell this course for $2,995, and you say in the copy, I've never lowered the price. If anything, I should raise the price based on the testimonials. I've never lowered the price. Don't wait for a discount. I love, number one, somebody who recognizes his worth, and number two, somebody who has the stones to say something like that, even though it would be easy to say, well, but look, I'll give you a discount of $300. You just refuse to do it. I love that. I want to be you.
Okay. You can do it. It's not so hard. You know, it's just words.
Well, I've sometimes told people that if you really are good at writing advertising copy, I mean, and it can be direct mail marketing. It can be copy in a long form ad in a newspaper, whatever. If you're good at that, then you can make a pretty comfortable living and generally from the comfort of your own home. It's a great line of work if you get good at it. And there obviously there are best practices and you should learn from people who know what they're doing. But in this, like with so many professions, there are, let's say, recommended practices that it turns out if you defy them, you do a lot better. And one of them, of course, is frequency of email. And it used to be, oh, you don't want to bother people and you should just send them value emails and only ask for a sale every fifth time and mail them twice a week and whatever. That one, I think people are starting to realize that's not so smart. What's your opinion on that?
Well, here's the thing. We have to realize some people are going to love us and some people are going to hate us and some people are going to be indifferent. And if somebody has come to your website and opted in and wants to get more, find out if they love you, hate you, or are indifferent to you right away. Why beat around the bush? The people that hate you are going to hate you, and the people that are indifferent are going to drift away anyway. So the only people you really care about are the people who, for whatever crazy reason, love you. And they want to hear from you every day. Now, they don't want to hear junk, and they don't want to hear, you know, clueless pitches, but they want to be entertained. They want to be stimulated. They want energy. And for some reason, they've picked you. And it's completely arbitrary. That's what I'm learning as I go into old age. We don't know why people like us or don't like us. And there's not a whole lot we can do. But what we can do is water the flowers and ignore the weeds. And if somebody opts in, give them something good every day. And they'll be happy for it and you'll make more money. That's my theory.
Do you mail on the weekends?
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah. See, that shows goes to show, for all my bluster, I'm actually a lazy bum at heart.
You'll get there. You'll get there. You're on the road.
Well, I mean, you know, with the podcast, I'm at over 2,000 episodes. I generally try to mail 5 times a week, but I don't reproach myself if I miss one. I have, well, one of my daughters off at college now, but I have 4 daughters, nevertheless, in the home. And things come up, you know, that things just come up. And that's part of the beauty of this business. It's also part of the beauty of having a free newsletter. If you miss one, it's okay. I mean, what did you pay for it, right? But I do my very best to do that and to make it something that people look forward to and that there's value in it and so on. Yeah. But I'll say, although I don't mind getting, let's say, topic ideas from people or guest suggestions for the podcast, there's one thing that makes me irrationally belligerent. And that's when somebody gives me unsolicited advice about how I should run the business end of what I do. You know, Tom, you should just have a digest of your emails available to people, or you should do this, or you shouldn't pitch so much, or you should block, instant block, not interested in debating this with you.
Yep. I get a lot of those too. I get a lot of people telling me how to do internet marketing. And so I listen, I take notes. I listen attentively, I take notes, and who knows, I might get a good idea from somebody.
Well, now, I know this might sound like an oddly self-serving question, but I am curious, how does a guy like Ken McCarthy come across me?
Oh, boy. You're just in the air, Tom.
I'd love to think so.
Well, let me tell you something, and it relates to something that we're both very interested in. Very early on in this, what I call this scamdemic thing, you gave an extended talk. And I know I was aware of you before, but you gave an extended talk where you really demolished the lunacy of this thing very early on, right on the launch pad. And I had grave concerns myself, but I was distracted and I really didn't have time to do the kind of research that you'd done. And by watching your video, that put the steel in my spine to get on it and start fighting this thing.
Oh, thank
you. So I thank you. And I shared that email with tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people. You were really early out of the gate and you've been completely correct. In fact, that's led, if I may do a little plug for something, that led to me doing a collaboration with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I contributed to his new book, The Real Anthony Fauci, and I am behind the scenes helping make sure that book makes it and stays at number one. And we did, I think we made it as far as number two on Amazon so far, but we haven't given it up yet.
Well, and some of those sorts of things depend a little bit on luck, like what also is for sale that week.
Absolutely. You know? And I keep telling them that. I say, listen, if Oprah announces a trilogy on the Kardashians, we're screwed.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do about that. It's absolutely true. Ron Paul had a number one New York Times bestseller for a week. And then the next week, I forget maybe Barbara Walters had a biography, or it might have been Barbara Streisand. I don't even remember who it was, but it was just some empty head celebrity. Yep. And so, of course, that's just going to sell zillions of copies. So it's good that that came about the following week. So anyway, two is unbelievable because the sales rank on Amazon, of course, includes cookbooks, fiction, self-help, all these categories in one.
Novels.
Which that's what people read. They don't read nonfiction, unfortunately.
You know, I looked this up. You might appreciate this. Their inventory lists 32 million titles, not 32 million books in a warehouse, 32 million separate titles. Can you imagine getting to the top of that dog pile?
Yeah, that's incredible. Now, did he self-publish? What kind of publisher's behind
him? He's going with this really great publisher, Skyhorse Publishing. They don't necessarily have a super brand name, but they are affiliated with one of the big houses. So they've got fantastic distribution. They have 1,000 titles in their catalog. And Tom Lyons is the son of the guy that started Lyons Press, and they really know their business. And I've never seen in my entire life, I've never even heard of a publisher rolling his sleeves up and working so hard to help a book.
All right. Well, I think because they have to see the potential in this book.
Well, I keep telling it, you always need vision. And that's one of the things, for whatever reason, I have no idea, that I sometimes occasionally have. And what I keep telling them, Bobby and the publisher, guys, we've got the topic of the age, we've got the villain of the age, and we've got a man whose brand name you could not duplicate with $100 billion in advertising. We've got it all. This book has legs. If we lose, we lost by surrendering. We don't need to lose.
Right. Yeah. No, this is yours to lose, really. I mean, you have every possible advantage. Yep. Now, the nice thing, of course, is, as you say, a guy like RFK Jr. has the name recognition. Any publisher is going to sit up and take notice. For the average person writing a book, especially with one of the larger houses, the trouble is if they do agree to publish your book, there's no guarantee they're going to flex that marketing arm for your title. And so I've heard, for example, I know somebody who publishes with Doubleday, and he says, I'm just left hanging out to dry. I got to do my own promo, my own whatever. They'll promote Paula Deen's book or whatever really hard, but not mine. And what's more, it's also very, very hard to sell books. I think people think you write a book and you retire on the royalties. It is so the opposite of that. The statistic I got about 15 years ago, and I think it's probably still true, was that there was, in that year, Doubleday had published 3,000 separate titles. Okay. And of those 3,000 titles, the number that sold more than 2,000 was only 200 of them sold over 2,000 copies. So most books are total bombs. But the problem is, as a guy like me, who I have written a bunch of books, I've had a couple of them on the New York Times bestseller list, people think I must probably have $20 million. That's not how royalties work in publishing. And secondly, people don't read nonfiction. If you have a nonfiction bestseller, it means it's selling pretty well. But if you knew the statistics, you would say, oh, I thought you were selling millions. No nonfiction book sells millions of copies. I know there are exceptions, but in general, that ain't how it works. Anyway, I don't want to just talk about my
really
sob
great,
story.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, I don't want to hijack this into all my sob stories about publishing.
No, because you know what? We may have some people that are interested in writing books, and this is a very important reality check we're sharing, because I know quite a bit about book marketing. One of my oldest friends, Steve O'Keefe, is literally the guy that Jeff Bezos went to learn how to sell books online. Okay, so I've been in this field a little bit, right? So the reality, Tom, and you know this, but everybody producing a book needs to know this, your publisher will not support your book. Count on it. It's a miracle if they're interested. It's bizarre, but that's how they operate. So it's your job as the author to sell the book. Number two, think of your book as a calling card. It's not really the end in itself.
Right.
It's the best business card. It's the best brochure you could ever have. And here's the beauty of a book. It instantly makes you an authority. It transforms your life. You went from a schmo to an author.
Yeah.
And people do respect authors.
For better or worse, of course.
Yeah.
But that is something to bear in mind, because it's too short-sighted to think solely in terms of the money you'll make directly from the sale of that book. In the same way that if you created something purely digital, some kind of information product, the primary benefit you're going to get from certainly your first information product is not really the revenue that it brings in. It's more the connections you make with affiliates who are going to promote your product. It's building the email list from all the buyers. I have a friend who, when he launches his products, he has a whole funnel. So there'll be some information product at the front end of the funnel. And then once you buy that, he'll try to sell you a few more things. And he gives his affiliates 100%, not just of the front end product, but of every single product in the entire funnel. Because he says, this is not about making money in the immediate term. It's about getting a lot of prospects on my list and earning money by promoting other things to them later.
Absolutely. And he's not only getting prospects, he's getting known buyers who bought his thing. And if you've got a list of those people, that's where you start. You know, you talk about making money, that's where the money starts. When you've got a list of known buyers who know, like, and trust you, you really have a license to print money. So it's not the book, it's not the front, there's front end and back end. So we're talking about the back end, the book, and all these things are front end. What you really want is that customer list. And that is gold. It's worth more than gold. I've got some gold, you know, but I'd rather have my customer list.
Right.
Because gold can be confiscated, you know.
That's
right. It can go back to 200 an ounce. But your customer list is money forever, as long as you take care of them.
Now, one reason I haven't written a book in a while is that it's exhausting to promote a book.
Oh,
you have to be in salesman mode constantly. Every single appearance you make, you got to just hammer away at that book. And you're thinking to yourself, yeah, each one of these, if I'm lucky, brings me in $3, and I'm on this radio show talking, you know, and people have to then go to the store, or they have to remember to go to Amazon, look it up. I hate doing it. But on the other hand, I don't really have to do it anymore in terms of just supporting my family, because I got that initial, I have all these books, I have 12 of them. I have the credibility now that the book brings me. I have the notoriety, I have the speaking engagements, you know, I have all that stuff that's come from that. So I don't really have to produce any more books if I don't want to. Now, there may still be a topic or two that I want to hit, but in terms of my lifestyle and providing for my family, I'm glad that I'm no longer in a rat race where, well, it's a new year, got to write another book or two. That's a really, really grueling thing.
You know, I was talking with our mutual friend, Ben Settle, about this, and the guy that I look up to and admire the most in this space of marketing information is Dan Kennedy. I don't know if that's a name for like.
Oh, absolutely.
He will not let a year. Now, he's a superhuman and we can only aspire to approximate him, but he will not let a year go by where he hasn't published at least one or two new titles. Sometimes they're revised editions of previous titles, but he views having new books in the pipeline as that important to his whole mechanism of bringing people in and building the following. So, like I said, he's superhuman, you know, we'll approximate him, but we have to look to that and say, well, if he's doing it, believe me, he's thought it out. He's not doing it because he has some idealistic view that maybe it's a good thing. He's doing it because it pays. It makes the cash register ring.
I guess I'm probably writing, now that I think about it, I'm probably writing a couple hundred thousand words a year. So that's the equivalent of two or maybe even three books if I wanted to transform it all into book form. And I wouldn't rule out doing that at some point. The raw material sitting right there.
Well, you know, I'm lazy too in certain regards, and I don't have anywhere near enough books out. And all the books I do have, I have to thank my wife for, because what she does is take my writings and collect them. Right. So I have a book called The System Club Letters Book, and it is all things I wrote it, but she pieced it together. And if she didn't do that, I wouldn't have any books. So, you know, you can hire editors. Now, luckily, I have an in-house editor. But, you know, if you write a lot, and that's the key, and you were talking about writing daily, one of the reasons you write to your folks daily is at the end of the year, you have 365 pieces of content that you can weld into a book. And an editor can do it for you. And then you just, as you know, this instant publishing thing, I love physical books, by the way. You know, I don't have to have a warehouse full of books. I get an order, they print it out, and boom, it's in the mail. I mean, we live in an age of miracles when it comes to book publishing.
Yeah, that absolutely is true. And as you say, the book opens doors for you. And by the way, it's not correct to say, people say, you know, you shouldn't judge a book by its cover. Well, maybe you shouldn't, but people do, okay? And I can tell, anyone can tell from a mile away some of these self-published books because the cover is an atrocity. If you can't shell out a little dough for the cover, then you almost, maybe I'm being too extreme, you almost may as well not bother because the cover also gives you credibility. If it looks stupid, like, you know, some guy you hired on Fiverr did it, then that hurts your credibility. If anything, it might be counterproductive to put that thing out. But you got to put the dough out there for a good cover. My favorite cover story, by the way, one of my book covers, I think I told this story recently on the show, one of my book covers actually won a National Book Award for the cover. And what I loved about that was that the cover, Ken, was the one part that I had nothing to do with whatsoever. that won the award.
Which book?
It was my book on the Catholic Church and Western Civilization. It had a gorgeous cover, beautiful. There was no input from me. If I had had 10 lifetimes, I couldn't have made that cover. But it ended up winning a big award. I thought, well, rather that than no award at all, I'll take it.
Wow. And you know, here's the funny thing. I want to get the book now. The fact that it won the cover award, I need to have the book.
The book. Absolutely. And what's amazing about it is that when the paperback edition of that book came out, we found out that the Spanish translation had a foreword by Cardinal Cañizares of Spain, who was the head of the Spanish Episcopal Conference. He was a major figure also in Rome. He was a potential papal candidate in the last conclave. And so we translated his foreword into English and made it the foreword to the paperback edition. And it makes me look like Mr. Influential Guy with contacts in Rome and whatever, you know, and I'm just some guy working out of my office and that all happened by accident. You mentioned your book, The System Club Letters.
The System Club Letters. Hey, let's hope this guy becomes Pope. Then you're golden.
I'm telling you, I think Francis's appointments have made that impossible. They'll never elect him now, but that's okay. That's okay. I'm still happy. But that book of yours, Ben said in a recent newsletter that he's read that multiple times. And I do that too with stuff like this. I want to get as much out of this as I can. Now, let me ask you though, I have a lot of people in my audience now who, for obvious reasons, are in a kind of limbo employment-wise, right? I mean, some people are just going to get the injection because what else are they going to do? You know, there are plenty of people that, and I'm not going to say you're a terrible person for doing that. I'm not going to say that. I'm not in your shoes and I'm not going to render judgment on those people. But there are some people who say, I will figure something out, but I am not consenting to this. So there's more interest than before in okay, could I run a business that does not involve some sociopath boss who's going to impose something on me that has zero to do with the health of the other employees? Nothing whatsoever. And so the basic model, like, there are a lot of things you could do online. You could have an e-commerce store, you could do print on demand, you could all kinds of different things. But the standard model that Ben keeps pointing to is, I realize, basically what I do, which is you build a list, you mail offers to that list. That's it. If you have a niche, something that you have knowledge in, and you build a list and you mail offers to that list. Now, how do you do those things? Okay, well, then you have to study with somebody. You have to get a course. You have to read about it. But that's basically it. Am I wrong about that? Can't you have a perfectly acceptable online business that consists of you build a list, you mail offers to it?
It's shocking how well it works. It's just amazing. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to make it work. I mean, it's just not easy to set up. It's not easy to get going. There's a lot of front-end work. It can be discouraging and, you know, and so on and so forth. But once you get it going, it is miraculous. I mean, I don't need to leave my house and yard if I don't want to, and I can just sit here and print money all day, depending on how hard I'm willing to hustle. But, you know, it took a while to get there. But, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of people are doing this, hundreds of thousands of probably, you know. So yeah, it is attainable. It is a subset of this thing called direct response. You know, there's two ways to sell things. One, you can have a store and hope people come in. Or two, you can reach out to people directly and have them buy your stuff from you directly. It's labor intensive, no kidding. A lot, you should be a good writer or someone willing to become a good writer. You need to be prolific. You need to crank it out every day. But if you do, it does work. I'm living proof. Ben's living proof. Sounds like you're living proof.
Yeah.
There's many, many people. And it all boils down to picking an area that's lively. You know, you don't want to pick buggy whips and corsets. You know, that's probably not going to, well, who knows? There might be a market for that, but we won't go there. But you're looking for things, you know, money, health, better living. If you're an expert in some area like that, those are perennially interesting to people. And again, it's this weird personality thing. You put yourself out there as you are. You don't have to dress yourself up or put any on any strange characteristics. Just be what you are. Some people are going to love you irrationally. Some people are going to hate you irrationally. And, you know, you just put it out there and you water the flowers and you ignore the weeds and just keep feeding the flowers. And, you know, I have, you know, because I'm in the realm of teaching people how to do business. So the sky's the limit as to what I can charge. Well, I have lost count, but I have well over 100 people that have given me over $10,000 over the years. Those are the whales, you know. And I've seen people's customer lists that are way more impressive than that. So you offer them a lot of stuff and be, you know, communicating with them on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And be yourself. You don't have to be, you know, Ben's his cranky self. Dan's his cranky self. I'm not a crank. I can't, believe me, I can be cranky, but generally I'm not.
No, me either.
And I'm myself. And like I said, this was profound to me. And I've said it a couple of times on this call. Some people are going to love you irrationally. Some people are going to hate you irrationally. You have nothing whatsoever to do with it. Just put it out there and work with the people who love you.
Well, I am living proof of that. There are people with an insane obsession with me. And I just, one of my friends are, actually, you know what? As a matter of fact, I figure into one of Ben's books, Copy Troll, because he wrote a book on how to monetize your haters. Which is you can just ignore your haters. Nothing wrong with that. You know, if you don't have the constitution for, you know, fisticuffs, that's fine. You can just ignore them. But somebody like me, no, I don't want to just ignore them. I want to make money off them and then tell them I made money off them. I'll give you an example. This is the one that Ben barred from me. There's this rapper named, I think it's Talib Kweli, and he has like a million Twitter followers. He has no engagement with them, but he has a million Twitter followers. And he went after me one day. This is a guy who thinks the Nazis built the Berlin Wall because they didn't like diversity. That's what he said at one point. So we're not dealing with, you know, Albert Einstein here. So he went after me and started calling me all kinds of vicious names. I forget how it even started. I never even heard of this guy. He went on this tirade that went on for like 24 hours. And I thought, is he on some kind of like drug binge? How's he staying awake? It just never stopped. So then I thought, there has to be some way. I mean, first of all, nobody looked at this exchange and said, oh, this Tom Woods must be a terrible person. No one. So I thought, well, what am I going to do with this? So I took my main product, Liberty Classroom, and I said, all right, for the next 2 hours, for anybody here on Twitter, I'm going to take $200 off the top membership level if you use the coupon code Taleb, his first name. That's the coupon code. And so thousands of dollars came in over the next couple of hours, and it was exclusively at his expense. It was entirely at his expense.
I love it.
So that's good. You got to have fun with it. You know, so don't be afraid somebody will hate you. If somebody hates you, it means you're getting attention, and you turn that into an email or a campaign or a promotion or whatever.
Yeah, the problem, believe it or not, is if nobody hates you, that means nobody cares enough.
I know.
It's a strange thing. You know, there was a great genius of our field named Gary Halbert.
Of course.
Yeah,
I've read his letters too.
Yeah, his letters are great. And he had a book called Maximum Profit and Minimum Time, something like that, which was his lead generation. It was his front end product. And he said this profound thing. He said, my book is the meat cleaver of humanity. Some people read it and love it and hate me. Some people read it and love me. And he was fine with that. And so that's a very important psychological orientation if you're going to put yourself out there as a writer, publisher, thinker, speaker. And you make the really good point. Have fun with the haters because they're idiots, most of them.
Oh, yeah. These are not, I mean, first of all, most people who are really bright don't spend their time obsessing about some internet personality. You know, so already you know there's some kind of mental deficiency going on. Hey, everybody, let's take a minute to thank our sponsor, BitTrust IRA. A lot of people have been putting crypto into their IRAs. And if you're thinking of doing the same thing, adding Bitcoin to your retirement account, the best way is through BitTrust IRA. The crypto world can be confusing. It's hard to know where to get started. These guys will help you. BitTrust IRA stores your private keys in nuclear bunkers with military-grade encryption. And by the way, when they say nuclear bunkers, that isn't just hyperbole where they're saying it's really, really secure. We're actually talking about decommissioned nuclear bunkers. They have a 24/7 trading platform with no minimum investments and unlimited trades, plus a team to help guide you along the way if you have any questions. They also offer the lowest trading fees in the industry. So how do you get started? Go to bittrustira.com/woods today to learn more. And for a limited time, BitTrust IRA is waiving the sign-up fee for Tom Woods Show listeners. That's a $50 value. That's bittrustira.com/woods. bittrustira.com/woods. I had an interesting insight back in 2008 when I still had this kind of idea, even though it had been falsified by experience over and over again, that if I just expressed my opinions sincerely and effectively, everybody had to respect me. I know. Even I laugh at that now. But a friend and I wrote a book called Who Killed the Constitution? And it's a good book. And we were showing that the assaults on the Constitution have really come from all sides, from the left, the right, the president, the Congress, the Supreme Court.
Amen.
It's just
Amen.
Everywhere. But the thing is, as a marketer, think about that. You write a book basically saying, oh, everybody's to blame. Who wants to read that? They want to read a book about how my enemies are at fault. Yeah. So we didn't even think about that. We thought, well, this will be great. Everybody will love this book. But it turns it was one of my biggest flops ever. Because it turns out nobody wants to read that. They want to read My Tribe is the Great Defender and these people are the great offenders.
Maybe you could do a series, How the Left is Destroying the Constitution, then How the Right is Destroying the Constitution.
We should have made it into multiple books, yes.
Actually, you know what? We're joking, but that could really yield some fruit.
I know. 13 years later, I figure out the code for how to have done that.
We're all learning all the time. That's the beauty of this business. It's a great university.
Well, by the way, somebody listens to what you and I are saying. Like you say, look, you have a model like this, and it's like you have a money printing machine. People say, oh, come on, you know, that you scammer, that can't possibly be right. If that were true, why isn't everyone doing it? And I'm going to tell you, I'm going to give you two reasons why everybody isn't doing it. Number one, most people have no idea this model exists. I mean, almost nobody is even aware of it. Number two, if they try it, they get discouraged by the very thing you said, which is that it takes a while to get going. The hardest part is to get going on it. Building a list is hard. I mean, there are ways to do it, but it's not the easiest thing in the world. But once you have it, it's like starting a podcast. The things you have to do, you have to get listed on the podcast apps, and you have to have an avatar for your show, and you know, you have to have a little icon, all this stuff. Yeah, that's really annoying. But once that's in place, it's total autopilot for me every day. I just come in my office, everything's already set up. So likewise with this kind of business, yeah, the setting it up, the getting the list and learning stuff, that is time consuming. And that's where most people just say, ah, well, I thought I was going to be rolling in the dough in the first 2 weeks. Well, you're not. You're not. But if you persist in it and you've got a good niche and you read everything you can about building a list, I can't guarantee you're going to be successful, but you have a pretty good shot. I'll say that.
Yep, absolutely. And the need to be prolific, you know, your daily podcast, the daily emails, this is the price of admission. So, you know, why isn't everybody doing this? The same reason everybody isn't a brain surgeon. There's work involved.
There is work, yes.
And it's serious.
Yeah, there is. And I think because they hear it's like a money printing machine, they think that means it's easy. There's no reason to assume that. That's just an assumption. It's not easy.
Well, let's look at it this way. Surgeons have money printing machines. They put on their scrubs. They show up.
Yes, correct.
They're getting paid. It's a money machine, you know?
Correct.
But they had to go to medical school and internship and all that. And we've got our price of admission too. And it's steep. It's steep. Now, with that being said, I want to say that what we do ultimately is not rocket science. It's not brain surgery. It's more akin to plumbing. And I have all respect for plumbers. In fact, I think plumbers are the people responsible for the positive public health in the world today more than any other profession. I revere plumbers and plumbing. However, it's a fairly straightforward job. You connect the pipes, you make sure the seams are not leaking. If there are leaks, you plug them. You connect to the main water line. That's plumbing. That's what we're doing. We're doing it with words. We're doing it with our followers. We're connecting the dots with words.
Yes.
It's not rocket science, but it's as serious as plumbing. You got to, you know, if there's a leaky pipe, well, you know, you've failed, you know.
And see, I love my last high school reunion was canceled because of the virus. But the one before that, I go to all my reunions. I have a friend, Tom DiLorenzo. He lives by the idea that reunions are for losers. I disagree. Reunions are so that the people who made fun of you can see that you're such a winner that you won. Okay, so
fair enough.
Yeah. Anyway, you can't detect any resentment in my voice there. Anyway, I was at my reunion and I found out that one of my classmates does marketing for Procter & Gamble.
Oh.
And so I just wanted to talk to her the whole night because they do split testing and all the different oddball things. I'm not a big tester. Honestly, I'm not. I respect people who are. But, you know, there are things like if the buy button is red rather than green, that actually will have a very, very tiny effect on stuff. And that interests me. And I wanted to know, is that the case for her? And I just love this stuff. I find it fascinating. If you don't find it fascinating, then this is going to be a bit of a chore for you. But it's not a chore for me. I want to learn. Every time an information product on this stuff comes out, I want to know more. I want to consume it. And so I promote some of these to my folks. And I understand not everybody has the same interests I do. If everybody on my list sent me stuff they're interested in, I would be repelled by most of it. I don't care about any of it. But I jump at it. So with you, are you primarily a teacher of how to write copy? Is that what your work revolves around?
Oh, that's so interesting. You know, I'm always trying to figure out what I am. And my tagline these days is the old school, and pardon the lack of humility, the old school marketing genius who invented internet marketing. That's my tag. And what I am good at is what we're doing on the phone right now is explaining how all this stuff works. I'm really good at teaching copywriting. I'm a really good copywriter. But, you know, I'm good at the vision thing. For some reason, I'm able to see what someone is trying to do, and I will see potentials in it that they've overlooked. I'm actually doing that right now with the Kennedy book. I'm sort of advising them, like, guys, you've got something bigger than you even realize. And I'm often in that position where I'm helping people that already have something really solid, really fully understand the potential they've got. So I'm part plumber, part philosopher.
I think my listeners are going to be tired of hearing me say this, but what you just said reminds me very much of Jay Abraham and what he does, because he deals with people in all different industries. So he doesn't have industry-specific suggestions generally, but he's the guy who gives a bird's-eye overview of your operation and says, why aren't you doing this? Why don't you consider doing that? So he doesn't. He's not the guy you go to when you want to increase your revenue by 1.7%. He's the guy you go to when you want to revolutionize what you're doing and increase your revenue by 50%.
That's me. And and Dan Kennedy has equated me in writing with Jay Abraham. So if people know who Jay is. And, you know, when Brian Kurtz did his greatest of all time direct response people, it was Jay Abraham, Dan Kennedy, the great Gary Bensavenga, the great copywriter, and me. That's who he put on as the greatest of all time. So I'm up there, you know. I'm in the game.
I love it. I absolutely love that. I'll tell you this, and as I said, I've told this story already a lot of times, but it was exciting for me. I got to talk to Jay Abraham about what I do for a living for 2 hours.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. I paid for that. That was not cheap. But it was worth every penny times 10. It was so great. And I have a recording of our conversation. And we just flat out liked each other right from the start. Because he had asked me in advance, he said, write out a full overview of everything I need to know about what you do. And then I'll look at it and we'll talk. And I'm telling you, it was just insight after insight. So then, now I'm addicted to this. Because when you said that that's what you do, now I'm thinking, I wonder what an hour of Ken's time would run me.
It's 2,000.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, I'm available.
I would do that. I would do that today if I weren't so busy. That is great. Okay, well, you and I are going to have to talk then because I want to make that happen. Even though it's more important to implement what Jay said than for me to keep getting more, of course, right?
That's it. Well, you know what? I always tell people, don't be a marketing genius, be an implementation genius.
Yes.
And you know, there's something that I want to throw out for future conversations between. I am fascinated with homeschooling. I would love somehow to inject what I know about business building into education for children so that they can become business people early in life. There's no reason to wait until they're 20 or 30 or 40. They can start doing stuff now and they're capable of it. They just need to be shown that it's doable, it's possible.
Well, I think, Ken, what you need to become here is an implementation specialist. Just take that idea and make a course out of it.
Well, I notice you're connected with a certain individual who already has a fantastic program. Is there room in that universe of homeschooling for a course on business building for kids?
I don't know. I wouldn't say it's impossible. I'm a course creator for that program and I promote it, but I'm not the guy in charge, so I can't make any guarantees. But I would say that the guy in charge would have to be out of his mind to say to Ken McCarthy, nah, I don't think we want your course for kids.
Maybe you'd write me a letter or something, you know?
But I'm sure on your list, you got a ton of parents. You could just market the thing directly. You could just make it and market directly.
Well, you know, then there's the issue of distribution. You know, this is a big clue right here. One of the things you're looking for are people that already are reaching the people that you would love to reach. So, you know, for instance, I've been talking about Fauci since March 2020. And so as soon as I realized that Bobby Kennedy was on the same thing, I reached out and we joined forces, you know. And so we're always looking in life for force multipliers. Now, obviously, he's a big fish compared to me, but he needed, you know, he could take advantage of my the research that I've done, and I'm in the book on quite a few pages. So that's a big key here. You know, your audience is out there, and there are people that already control your audiences that you want to reach or resources that you want to have access to. And so when I think about homeschooling, I think, you know what, let me find someone that's already got the distribution channel. Let me create the content. I've already made, you know, I retired 10 years ago, theoretically, and I'm interested in making money, and I still do make money, but I'm more interested in having an impact on the world, you know? And so if somebody already has the channel to reach thousands or hundreds of thousands of families, I'd rather drop my thing in there and let them run with it than build up the whole machine myself.
Yeah, of course. If the infrastructure is there already, what would be the point of reinventing the wheel? So, all right, so we can certainly talk about that, but I definitely want that hour. Maybe I want more than an hour.
I hate to say this, I'm so fast that in 20 minutes you'll probably be there. But we'll go the full hour.
Oh yeah,
want more? And you know what? I get bored after an hour. Like you'll see how much comes out in an hour, and you'll go like, okay, I got 10 years of work ahead of me. So, but okay, if you want more, you know, It's possible.
Okay, well,
it's not guaranteed though. I have to be interested. That's the other thing. Like, you can't just show up with $2,000 and say, "Talk to me." It's just, I don't care.
Yeah, no. But I would send you the document I sent to Jay.
Oh, well, you are an interesting person. There's no problem there. I'm just saying, I think in an hour you'd be shocked at what we could pull out.
Wow. Okay.
I'm not a good consultant in the sense that a smart consultant drips out his advice over 20 years. I hit you with the whole thing in the first hour.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's what I want. You know, it's not even that I'm crazy. I think people have this impression that I'm a crazily busy guy. And I actually feel bad when people, I know they're being courteous to me when they say, "Listen, I know you're really busy and I don't want to take up a lot of your time." I know that that's them being courteous. So I'm not resentful of that, but I don't like the impression that I'm running around like a wild man, because the life I've tried to build for myself is specifically designed to avoid that. And yep. It's the kind of thing I do does not require me to be running around ragged all the time. In fact, I travel a lot. I'm on vacation a lot. I see the sights to make up for all the years when I was such a workaholic. But that is kind of one of the benefits of what we do, is that I can choose, well, today I'm going to send just the one email. But if there's a really, really key promotion, maybe I'll send five. But if I only send one because I wasn't feeling well, life still goes on. I can do it from wherever. I mean, it's not a bad deal.
Let me add to that, Tom. In this kind of business, it is important that you pace yourself and that you discipline yourself not to wear yourself out, because this is a long haul game. Like, this is a marathon, and it takes a while to put points on the scoreboard, especially in the beginning. And so you have to be in this rhythm of create, 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 promote. And you don't want to burn yourself out by, you know, just going nuts. You just have to, like, put in the, you know, a day's work every day. And one of the things that helped me in the very, very early years was never let the sun set on a day where you haven't done something to promote yourself to some new group or some new person. Just get in that habit.
Yeah, see, that's what you and I need to talk about, because that's where I'm not so good.
Okay.
I've gotten lazy on that. I will say that in terms of working, I don't feel guilty that I can enjoy leisure now, because I put in 10 years worth of work in 2 years when I was creating the courses for the Ron Paul curriculum. I mean, try creating 400 videos on history, which is, if it's math, that's one thing, because once you know math, you can just explain it forever. But history is a bunch of contingent facts that you can just forget, and you got to research them, make PowerPoints, edit them, come up with assignments for 400 of them, spanning from antiquity to the present in Western civilization. Man, that's insane. Like, no one can do that.
It is, Tom.
I mean, honestly, I don't even feel like it must have been some other person. I can't, like, right now I'm thinking to myself, I could never do that.
yet I did.
I have them on the website. I have them up. I did do that. So I put so at every lunchtime. I like eating lunch with somebody, you know, and chit-chatting over lunch. Every single lunch for 2 years was me poring over a book while I ate, you know, just, and I read nothing for pleasure for 2 years, nothing. It was always, if I had 10 minutes waiting in line or if I was getting an oil change, I was always reading some history book to make these videos the best I could for that curriculum. I mean, it was murder, absolute murder. And of course, I'm putting out the Tom Woods Show every weekday. It was murder. So I don't say, well, gee, I have this life now where I could just work a few hours a day if I so choose, and I still am able to, you know, keep the lights on. I don't feel guilty about that. No way.
Yeah, there's a price to admission, and you won't get in unless you pay it. And once you pay it, you're entitled to enjoy it.
Yeah. I mean, the reason I did a every single weekday podcast was because there wasn't one. So I'm going to do it. And that seems impossible. Like, who's going to do 5 days a week libertarian? And then likewise, John Lee Dumas, the great podcaster who has a podcast for entrepreneurs, he does 7 days a week, 365 episodes a year. And he said, why do I do that? Because nobody else was doing that. I would be the only one. So think like that. Like, think of something that seems impossible and then figure out how can I make it happen. I don't know if that's good. By the way, Ken, I don't know if that's good general advice. That sounds very poetic. I don't know if that's good general advice.
I, you know, you've got to stand out.
You do, yeah.
You know, and however you figure out how to stand out, you must stand out. This is one of the other keys to our business. Nobody needs another copy of another copy. They want to see something they've never seen before. So One way is daily content. When I was originally producing this thing called the System Seminar, and we haven't really talked about that, but you know, the System Seminar was the first place on earth where you could go and learn about sending emails, doing opt-ins, doing follow-up, doing split testing, doing pay-per-click advertising. Nobody was teaching this thing as a system. So we were the first to teach it. And the way I marketed it was I gave away a free hour-long conversation with each of the faculty members. So in order to promote the seminar, I might have done 12, 15. Now, in those days, it seemed like a lot. Now, I guess it wouldn't be much. But I was giving away 12 to 15 hours of audio content that was spectacular. And I never even pitched hardly. I said, okay, guys, you've heard Perry Marshall or you've heard, you know, Ben Settle. If you want to see them in person, we're all going to be in Chicago this week, you know? And that was my pitch. And we sold the thing out every year.
Wow, you know, I love
tickets
it.
Tickets were $2,000 a head. And, you know, you look out in a room over 300-400 people and it's like, that's a good day.
Yeah, that's a good day. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. One thing this kind of business has taught me is the potential for one day. Occasionally you have that one day where you think, oh my gosh, back when I was, you know, I was a college professor, it would have taken me 5 months to come up with this one day. Now, you don't have that one day every day of your life, but every once in a while, that one day, because all the stars align or you launch something new, you know, and then other times you have a one day, you know, where you think it's going to be one of those days and it kind of flops, but the potential is there. And that's keeps you hungry and interested and curious and driving and moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, that is one of the most interesting things about this business too, is you never know. I once literally at midnight when I was exhausted and said, I'm not going to do another one. I just grabbed a clip and threw it on YouTube. 5 million views later, I never would have dreamed. And this is when YouTube was small. This was before, you know, now 5 million, everybody's doing it, I guess.
Well, I would personally kill to do 5 million, so don't worry.
No, but the scary thing was this was a throwaway. I didn't expect it to do anything. And I was 99% of the way to not posting it. Frightening thought. So the prolificness of all this and the unpredictability, you just don't know how the market's going to respond. So you just keep making stuff. I saw this great, and I wish I could remember, it was Irving Berlin or one of these famous American composers. And it was like, he wrote 10,000 songs, he published 1,000, and he had 40 hits. That's the funnel for creativity.
Yes.
You just put it out there. You hope for the best. You do your best. You don't know what people are going to love. And if you're lucky, something's going to catch fire. And then my advice, throw fuel on the fire, which, believe it or not, is quite hard for some people to do. But do throw fuel on the fire. Do water the flowers. Do be nice to the people that are nice to you.
Yeah.
And it's amazing what happens.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, what's a link we can give people to get to know you more? Because I would think somebody listening to this would think, this guy has something to teach me. So how can they follow you?
Well, thanks for that. My name, Ken McCarthy, that's K-E-N, first name, McCarthy, McCarthy.com. And that's my website. And it's pretty primitive looking. My friends make fun of it, but you know, does what I needed to do. That's another secret of our business. I believe in beautiful book covers. However, everything doesn't need to be beautiful for people
ugly,
to take.
Ugly websites sometimes outperform the beautiful ones.
Oh, very. I would if I had to bet my life on ugly versus beautiful, I'll go with the ugly. As long as the ugly is sensible, has the links, has the offer is strong, the links are obvious. Ugly can very often be beautiful.
And, you know, I know we're supposed to be wrapping up and I've kept you way over and you're a really good
sport. I'm loving it. This is my favorite thing to do in the world.
Oh, so you see, I love talking about this stuff. So obviously I don't visit the Drudge Report anymore, but I used to. And that's an example of ugly. It's ugly. Oh, it has no functionality, just a bunch of links. It's as ugly as could be. It's like they designed it to be ugly. And it, you know, is massively one of the most, or at least for a while, was one of the most visited websites on the entire web. But then also, in terms of ugly, I mean, I personally, when I send emails, I want to make them as plain Jane as possible. I do not, I used to have a big banner with the Tom Woods letter, and I'd have a calendar of my events and all these bells and whistles. And it turns out that what works better is plain Jane because it feels, even though people know, obviously, you're sending it to a lot of subscribers, but it feels like a personal email. When you send a personal email to your grandmother, it doesn't have a big banner in it.
Exactly, exactly. And that is the power of direct mail or email, that it feels like it's been sent to you directly, and 99.9% of people get that wrong. And I'm forever trying to persuade people, text only, no attachments, no graphics, make it look like you just wrote it this morning.
Yeah, I remember watching somebody make that transition, somebody whose list I was on, and I thought, boy, that's a mistake. If he just sends these text emails, they're no, that was not a mistake. That was a great move on his part. So,
and there's even a deliverability issue, which is the more graphics you add, the less you're going to get delivered. I mean, it's a whole rabbit hole, but basically, simple, make your communications look personal.
Yeah.
Beginning, middle, and end of story, and you'll have much better response.
Yeah, totally agreed. All right. So, kenmccarthy.com is the website if you want to pursue the topics we've been discussing further. Ken is the guy. You could just Google him and you'll see. Everybody, if you don't like Google, you know, that's just an old habit of saying that. If there's some other search engine you prefer, type in Ken McCarthy. You'll see, I'm not making this up. Everybody views him this way. So he is the guy to connect with and learn from. So kenmccarthy.com. And Ken, I appreciate you sharing an hour with a total stranger. Thank you so much.
Tom, I'm honored. And I really thank you for all you do. I really profoundly do.
All right, folks, in this episode, we talked about a certain business model, and I said, you know, look, just build a list, send offers to that list. Well, that's easier said than done. Like, what does that even mean? I have a video, it doesn't cost you anything, where I walk you through exactly what I do, the tools I use, like which platforms I use and which services I use, and exactly what it is that I do along the lines of this model that I described. So if you want to watch that video, you can find it at tomwoods.com/crashcourse. And really, you know, I'm not one to just yammer on aimlessly. I try to economize with my words and make them pack a punch. So this 30 minutes, it's like 2 hours for a lot of people, okay? Because I am just packing. There's no fluff. There's no dad jokes. It's just me teaching you stuff and showing you on the screen. It's a screencast video. I do this on this website, then I subscribe to this thing, which gives me this service, and then I plug this into that. It's all there. So you want to go to tomwoods.com/crashcourse. And of course, you also want to visit Ken at kenmccarthy.com. I'll have these links up on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/2010. Thanks for listening.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of The Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.